We're continuing chapter 32 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. And you remember they just called in to Sirius's house to see if he was there. Mm-hmm. Harry's head began to spin as though he had just got off a fairground ride, though his knees remained firmly planted upon the cold office door. He kept his eyes screwed up on the whirling ash, and when the spinning stopped, he opened them to find himself looking out upon the long, cold kitchen of Grim Old Place. There was nobody there. He had expected this, yet was not prepared for the molten wave of dread and panic that seemed to burst through his stomach floor at the sight of the deserted room. "Sirius," he shouted. "Sirius, are you there?" His voice echoed around the room, but there was no answer except a tiny scuffling sound to the right of the fire. "Who's there?" he called, wondering whether it was just a mouse. Creature, the house elf, came creeping into view. He looked highly delighted about something, though he seemed to have recently sustained a nasty injury to both hands, which were heavily bandaged. "It's the Potter boy's head in the fire," Creature informed the empty kitchen, stealing furtive, oddly triumphant glances at Harry. "What has he come for?" Creature wonders. "Where is Sirius, Creature?" Harry demanded. The house elf gave a wheezy chuckle. "Master's gone out, Harry Potter." "Where's he gone? Where's he gone, Creature?" Creature merely cackled. "I am warning you," said Harry, fully aware that his scope for inflicting punishment upon Creature was almost non-existent in this position. "What about Lupin, Mad-Eye, any of them? Are any of them here?" "Nobody here but Creature," said the elf gleefully, and turning away from Harry, he began to walk slowly toward the door at the end of the kitchen. "Creature thinks he'll have a little chat with his mistress. Now, yes, he hasn't had a chance in a long time. Creature's mistress has been keeping him away from her. Creature's master has been keeping him away from her." "Where is Sirius gone?" Harry yelled after the elf. "Creature, has he gone to the Department of Mysteries?" Creature stopped in his tracks. Harry could just make out the back of his bald head through the forest of chair legs before him. "Master does not tell poor Creature where he's going," said the elf quietly. "But you know," shouted Harry, "don't you? You know where he is." There was a moment's silence, but the elf let out his loudest cackle yet. "Master will not come back from the Department of Mysteries," he said gleefully. "Creature and his mistress all alone again." He scurried forward and disappeared through the door to the hall. "You!" But before he could utter a single curse or insult, Harry felt a great pain at the top of his head. He inhaled a lot of ash, and choking, he found himself being dragged backward through the flames until, with a horrible abruptness, he was staring up into the wide, pallid face of Professor Umbridge, who dragged him backward out of the fire by the hair, and was now bending his neck back as far as it would go, as though she was going to slit his throat. "You think," she whispered, bending Harry's neck back even farther, so that he was looking up at the ceiling above him, "that after two Nifflers, I was going to let one more foul, scavenging little creature enter my office without my knowledge? I had stealth censoring spells placed all around my doorway after the last one got in, you foolish boy. Take his wand." She barked at someone he could not see, and he felt a hand grope inside his chest pockets of his robes and remove the wand. "Hers too." Harry heard a scuffle by the door and knew that Hermione had just had her wand wrestled from her as well. "I want to know why you're in my office," said Umbridge, shaking her fist, the fist clutching his hair so that he staggered. "I was trying to get my fireball," Harry croaked. "Liar," she shook his head again. "Your firebolt is under strict guard in the dungeons, as you know very well, Potter. You had your head in my fire. With whom have you been communicating?" "No one," said Harry, trying to pull away from her. He felt several hairs part company with his scalp. "Liar," shouted Umbridge. She threw him from her, and he slammed into the desk. Now he could see Hermione pinioned against the wall by Millicent Bulstrode. Malfoy was leaning on the windowsill, smirking as he threw Harry's wand into the air one-handed, and then caught it again. There was a commotion outside, and several large Slytherins entered, each gripping Ron, Ginny, Luna, and, to Harry's bewilderment, Neville, who was trapped in a stranglehold by Crabbe and looked in imminent danger of suffocation. All four of them had been gagged. "Got 'em all," said Warrington, shoving Ron roughly forward into the room. "That one," he poked a thick finger at Neville, "just stopped me from taking her." He pointed at Ginny, who was trying to kick the shins of the large Slytherin girl holding her. "So I brought him along, too." "Good, good," said Umbridge, watching Ginny's struggles. "Well, it looks as though Hogwarts will shortly be a Weasley-free zone, doesn't it?" Malfoy laughed loudly and sycophantically. Umbridge gave her wide, complacent smile and settled herself into a chintz-covered armchair, blinking up at her captives like a toad in a flower bed. "So, Potter," she said, "you stationed lookouts around my office, and then you sent this buffoon," she nodded at Ron, and Malfoy laughed even louder, "to tell me the poltergeist was wreaking havoc in the Transfiguration Department, when I knew perfectly well he was busy smearing ink on the eyepieces of all school telescopes, Mr. Filch having just informed me so. Clearly it was very important for you to talk to somebody. Was it Albus Dumbledore, or the half-breed Hagrid? I doubt it was Minerva McGonagall. I hear she's too ill to talk to anyone." Malfoy and a few of the other members of the Inquisitorial Squad laughed some more at that. Harry found he was so full of rage and hatred that he was shaking. "It's none of your business who I talk to," he snarled. Umbridge's slack face seemed to tighten. "Very well," she said, in her most dangerous and falsely sweet voice. "Very well, Mr. Potter. I offered you the chance to tell me freely, and you refused. I have no alternative but to force you. Draco, fetch Professor Snape." Malfoy stowed Harry's wand inside his robes and left the room smirking, but Harry hardly noticed. He had just realized something. He could not believe he'd been so stupid as to forget it. He had thought that all the members of the Order, all those who could help him save Sirius, were gone, but he had been wrong. There was still one member of the Order of the Phoenix at Hogwarts. Snape. There was silence in the office except for the fidgeting and scufflings resultant from the Slytherin's efforts to keep Ron and the others under control. Ron's lip was bleeding onto Umbridge's carpet as he struggled against Warrington's half-Nelson. Ginny was still trying to stamp the feet of a sixth-year girl, who had both upper arms in a tight grip. Neville was turning steadily more purple in the face, while tugging at Crabbe's arms, and Hermione was attempting vainly to throw off Millicent Bulstrode. Excuse me. Luna, however, stood limply by the side of her captor, gazing vaguely out the window as though rather bored by the proceedings. Harry looked back at Umbridge, who was watching him closely. He kept his face deliberately smooth and blank as footsteps were heard in the corridor outside, and Draco Malfoy came back into the room, holding open the door for Snape. "You wanted to see me, headmistress?" said Snape, looking around. Sorry, that was the wrong voice. "You wanted to see me, headmistress," said Snape, looking around at all the pairs of struggling students with a complete expression of indifference. "Ah, Professor Snape," said Umbridge, smiling widely and standing up again. "Yes, I would like another bottle of Veritaserum, as quick as you can, please." "You took my last bottle to interrogate Potter," he said, observing her coolly through his greasy curtains of black hair. "Surely you did not use it all. I told you that 3 drops would be significant. It would be sufficient." Umbridge flushed. "You can always make some more, can't you?" she said, her voice becoming more sweetly girlish, as it always did when she was furious. "Certainly," said Snape, his lips curling. "It takes a full moon cycle to mature, so I should have it ready for you in about a month." "A month?" squawked Umbridge, swelling toadishly. "A month, but I need it this evening, Snape. I've just found Potter in my fire to communicate with a person or persons unknown." "Really?" said Snape, showing his first faint sign of interest as he looked around at Harry. "Well, it doesn't surprise me. Potter has never showed much inclination to follow school rules." His cold, dark eyes were boring into Harry's, who met his gaze unflinchingly, concentrating hard on what it was he had seen in his dream, willing Snape to read it in his mind and to understand. I wish to interrogate him, shouted Umbridge angrily. And Snape looked away from Harry, back into her furiously quivering face. I wish you to provide me with a potion that will force him to tell him the truth. I have already told you, said Snape smoothly, that I have no further stocks of Veritaserum. Unless you wish to poison Potter, and I assure you I would have the greatest sympathy for you, with you if you did, I cannot help you. The only trouble is that most venoms act too fast to give the victim much time for truth-telling. Snape looked back at Harry, who stared at him, frantic to communicate without words. Voldemort's got Sirius in the Department of Mysteries, he thought desperately. Voldemort's got Sirius. You're on probation, shrieked Umbridge, and Snape looked back at her, her eyebrows slightly raised. You are being deliberately unhelpful. I expected better. Lucius Malfoy always speaks most highly of you. Now get out of my office. Snape gave her an ironic bow and turned to leave. Harry knew his last chance of letting the Order know what was going on was walking out the door. He's got Padfoot, he shouted. He's got Padfoot at the place where it's hidden. Snape had stopped with his hand on Umbridge's door handle. Padfoot, cried Professor Umbridge, looking eagerly from Harry to Snape. What is Padfoot? Where is it hidden? What does he mean, Snape? Snape looked around at Harry. His face was inscrutable. Harry could not tell whether he understood or not, but he did not dare speak more plainly in front of Umbridge. I have no idea, said Snape coldly. Potter, when I want nonsense shouted at me, I shall give you a babbling beverage. And Crab, loosen your hold a little. If Longbottom suffocates, it will mean a lot of tedious paperwork, and I'm afraid I shall have to mention it on your reference if you ever apply for a job. He closed the door behind him with a snap, leaving Harry in a state of worse turmoil than before. Snape had been his very last hope. He looked at Umbridge, who seemed to be feeling the same way. Her chest was heaving with rage and frustration. And I think we'll stop there. I hope you like that, my kitten boo, and I hope you have a sweet night and sweet dreams, my beautiful girl. Good night, baby kitten. I love you.
I love you too.
Good night.